Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home.
Thank you. Thank you, Valerie Marshall and Tina Mills and Mr. Christopher Fritchie for that. That is so beautiful. I'm going to talk about that song in just a moment. I first want to appreciate our wonderful stage from William Abel and point out that he brought back from Bodh Gaya in India, he was just recently there, these temple cloths from the Sikh tradition. And they're absolutely exquisite, and we're using them to help us feel our connection to other faith traditions in the world too. So thank you, William, for decorating our stage. Our theme for 2020 is beyond 2020 spiritual vision, seeing even clearer than what we call perfect vision. And this month we're talking about seeing clearly the power of nonviolence. So we're talking about Mahatma Gandhi. This is the season for nonviolence. And as you know, he was terrifically influenced by the Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. So I thought we'd begin with a quote from the Bhagavad Gita to explore what impacted him so. "One who is not connected with the Supreme, or God consciousness, can have neither transcendental intelligence, spiritual intelligence, nor a steady mind, without which there is no possibility of peace. And how can there be any happiness without peace?" These are the sorts of scriptures that influenced Gandhi terrifically. And I like this one because to me there is definitely a peace that comes from being consciously aware of my connection with spirit. It's a daily practice to stay conscious of that connection, isn't it? Here at the Center for Spiritual Living, before we have a meeting of any kind, we take a moment to remember that connection. So we breathe, we meditate together, we do our spiritual mind treatment, that's our form of prayer. We read our sacred covenant. We don't just go rushing into business. And this practice changes the way the meetings work. It brings about a peace and happiness. Now, as I continue to read about Mahatma Gandhi, it's clear to me he had a practice of his own. It's clear to me that his power to impact governments and change nations, well, didn't come from a desire to control anything or to destroy anything or to get even with anything. No, it came from this connection with God consciousness. It was a daily practice for him. He practiced keeping his mind as best he could steadily on what God was to him. And I think that became the key to the power in his life. And of course, he said, "My life is my message." And at the center of his life was God. If you think about it, that's what's going on for all of us all of the time. Whatever is at the center of our lives becomes our message to the world. Or another way of saying it, what we are steadily focused on shapes us. Or we can say, whatever our attention is put on persistently, repeatedly, well, it influences the way we interpret the world. The way we show up, the way we speak, the way we relate. Now, I've been using the word God a few times, and we've been exploring this whole year what that word God means. And if you want to catch up, look at the videos from January where we really unpacked that. But briefly, God is a shorthand term for an immense idea. Divinity. Spirit. That from which everything comes. So in our teaching, we start by saying, whatever it is, there's only one of it. And apparently, it isn't really important what word we use to name it, to describe it, since all words are limited and inadequate. And some people prefer such terms as life or nature or the force or divine mind or creation or the universe. And other people prefer more intimate terms, images such as spirit or God or Jesus or Allah or Kuan Yin and so on. And in our teaching, we accept that this whatever it is appears in many, many forms to different people, which is why when you hear our prayers being spoken, you hear a whole range of terms for this idea. We hear he, we hear she, we hear mother, father, we hear it, we hear spirit, we hear Lord. Emerson called it the oversoul. Ernest Holmes called it the thing itself, the all good, the universal mind, the indwelling spirit. And we've got to get clear on what do I call it? And what is it to me? My all-time favorite explanation of it comes from The Lazy Man's Guide to the Universe by Thaddeus Goles. The universe is made of one kind of whatever it is, which cannot be defined. Don't you love that? For our purpose, it isn't necessary to try to define it. All we need to do is assume that there is only one kind of whatever it is, and see if it leads to a reasonable explanation for the world as we know it. I love that. I read that all the time. Now, whatever it is, the question for us today is, does it have a central place in your life like it did in Gandhi's? Does your relationship to whatever it is make a good difference in your life? Again, think about your life's message comes from whatever has a central place in your life. Now, Gandhi called whatever it is truth. That's one of the words he called the divine frequently. And he said, my aim is to be consistent with truth at any given moment. He made truth the center of his life. He also said that it, truth, could have any one of 1,000 names, he said. And the main thing for you and I believe, is to keep whatever the divine is to us, and that's an evolving idea, to keep our focus on it and to let it remain at the center of our personal universe. So I'm going to tell you a little story from the history of astronomy. Are you ready? No? Okay. Galileo is an Italian astronomer. At the time, the world followed Ptolemy's system of astronomy. But Galileo thought there was something wrong because it was such a complicated theory, you know. And here's why it was. There was a problem in Ptolemy's theory. Ptolemy thought that the Earth was the center of the universe, you know? And the sun went around the Earth, and the moon and the stars were all swirling around the Earth. Now, to make this work, the mathematical calculations had to be very, very complicated because it was wrong. Now, there was another astronomer, Copernicus, and he had a much simpler idea. He put the sun at the center of the universe. And his idea turned out to be correct, even though it wasn't accepted for a long time. It was correct because, here it comes, everything was in the right place. So it made an elegant and beautiful sense. It worked. Can you see how this is helpful for us? It's a guide. It's a guide to what happens when things are in the correct order. Because maybe you've noticed that when your ego thinks it's the center of the universe, the complications become immense. The computations, the explanations, because the theory is faulty. You have to have elaborate and extensive explanations for why it is so when it isn't. So the solution then is to get our attention back to the thing that is indeed the real center of our universe, the divine presence that lives in you and lives in me and in all beings. Then when that's arrayed, I got that, then I am in the center of the universe and it is in me. Or another way to say it practically is this: put God first. Put her first. Put it at the center of your life. Put him where you can't miss him. Wake up with your mind on divine energy. Go to bed with spirit in your thoughts. Eat and drink and play with the creative genius as your priority. And then synchronize your attention to that. And then try in your life to be what spirit is to you, like Gandhi did. Try to be steady-minded on spirit, like Gandhi did. Try consulting within to where the presence is, like Gandhi did. Try to make the purpose of all your relationships to express more of its light and love, loving kindness, connection, and beauty, like Gandhi did. Your life is your message, and it comes from what is at the center of your being, if your attention is on it. Now, I tell this story often because it made such an impact on me, but here it comes again. A long time ago, I went to go and visit a childhood friend I grew up with. I went to visit him. He had immigrated to England. And when I was calling him to make the final arrangements, he said, "You know, my little brother is so excited that you're coming to visit." And I realized I didn't even remember his little brother, because there was such an age difference between my friend and I and his little brother that I had kind of like put him out of my awareness. So I got there and knocked on the door, feeling a bit awkward about it. And the little brother ran up to me, now an adult, and said, "Oh my God, Edward, I'm so glad to see you. You're my role model." And I was like, "Okay, why is that?" He said, "Oh, you were such a rebel at school. You were always bucking the system and you never got caught skipping out of school and you were smoking." And I went, "Oh my goodness, I didn't even know he was watching. You know, I didn't realize that my life was communicating a message about what was centrally important to me. That my focus, I'd put my rebelliousness and my scorn at the center of my universe, and it was shaping my life, and it was shaping the world." A teaching of Jesus comes to mind. "For where your treasure is, there will your heart be also." So we can get to look at our priorities and check what's most important to me now, because that's creating something for me in my life right now, and that is affecting how I spend my time and my money and my energy and my emotions, and that is where my message to the world is coming from. So those that come after me, what will they say they learned about life from witnessing mine. Now, maybe you didn't have a good role model growing up. I mean, perhaps your parents, like mine, were doing the best job they knew with the information they had access to at the time, and they didn't know how to do any better, and maybe they left some scars. It happens. And now it's your turn and my turn, and you and I have an opportunity to change the story up, to rewrite the script and set in motion a new and different set of influences on the world by what we let ourselves focus on and dwell on, which becomes our message to the world. The beautiful song that we heard this morning is composed by John McCutcheon. It gives us an example of somebody whose life's focus was their message, whose life's focus guided them to contribute to a better world in a place of war and ugliness. It's called The Streets of Sarajevo, and it tells the famous story of the cellist of Sarajevo, whose name was, if I can say it right, Vedran Smailovic. And his story goes something like this. When Sarajevo was besieged in 1992 by the Yugoslavian People's Army, and was over 1,000 days of, it was called the Bosnian War, what he would do is he would regularly play his cello inside the ruined, bombed buildings. He refused to let what was happening around him stop him or take his focus off what was important to him, the center of his life. Even after the opera house was destroyed and 22 of his neighbors were killed while they were standing in line for food rations, he continued to play. He offered his art as a prayer for peace. He played in the ruins, and he played at bomb sites, and he played at the new graves and at funerals, even though snipers often targeted people at those funerals. He refused to let what was happening in the world distract him from what was at the center of his life. Our teaching, The Science of Mind, is about that. It's about getting clear on what you want to be your guiding force in life. Right? Yeah. And let that have a central place. That's why whenever we pray, we begin with God or some word for God. We begin, God is. We start there. So we say something like, God is everything. God is in everything. God is through everything. God is above, below, inside, outside. And everything is made from God's stuff. And wherever you go, there she is. And whatever you think, God is the power of that thought. And God is in the clothing you wear. And God is in the air you are breathing. God is your breath. And God is in your heart. And God is in your soul. And God is in your mind. And God is where you are. And God is in the field. And God is in the flowers. And God is in the unsheltered. And God is in the beautiful. And God is in all that we have judged and labeled and loved and run toward and run away from. Oh, it's a great and wonderful mystery that it is so. We don't know why, but we sense that it is. We sense that the universe is made up of one kind of whatever it is. And we still have to deal with the harsh realities of the world. Of a world seemingly gone mad recently. Some say the world is in a terrible shape right now. Or it's easy to get discouraged when that becomes the center of my universe. Yes, I know that the practice of this, of regularly bringing back my mind to God, is what feeds me. It feeds me in a way that the world never can. The practice of bringing my mind back to God inspires me to do what good I can do. The practice causes me to love when it is difficult to do so. The practice allows me to see the truth of Gandhi. We are not divided like the world is saying, and we never were. And if we appear to be divided, then I must bring that which is the focus and the meaning and the truth of my life back into central focus until I see the world anew through the filter of truth as it really is. It takes courage to look at adversity in the face and say, surely the presence of God is in this place. How must I speak to what's going on in the world? It takes bravery when things are hurting to say, the spirit of life within me is greater than that which is before me. How must I respond? It takes practice when disaster strikes to say, I know peace is at the heart of God. What is mine to do? And maybe it isn't as easy as it sounds. And I know it can be demanding, and we've probably all been challenged at moments in this practice. And maybe when we do put the divine back in the right position at the center of our universe, maybe things will start to sort themselves out. Maybe it does get easier. It's worth trying. So this then, in summary, here's our practice. When things get complicated, when the math is too complicated, when things are stressful and frightening, it's time to sit still and turn within and check my priorities and ask myself, what is my attention on? What am I giving first place in my consciousness? Do I need to put the Son of the whatever it is, of God the living spirit, back in the center where it belongs? And then after a moment of silence, my work in the world begins again. I have a friend who has a practice that I think is worth trying. He sets his cell phone on a random time for an alarm during the day. His is at 3:33 p.m. And when it goes off, he pauses and he asks himself, where is my mind? What is my attention on? And do I need to bring it gently back to the divine? And if he's with his children, he asks them to pause for a moment and list three things that they're grateful for. So beautiful. So I invite you to practice that yourself. Now, the meditation I bring for you today, and yes, I did print them out. You're welcome to come pick them up from me in person afterwards. It goes like this. So I invite you to breathe in and to exhale, letting your eyes close. Imagine these words are your own, being spoken in the silence of your own mind. Because I believe in the power of the living spirit, and I know that the law of good operates upon this, my word of prayer, I speak this word with freedom, with enthusiasm, with joy. I speak it with a deep sense of calmness and peace. I know that divine intelligence is what governs me, and that this, my word of prayer, is a channel of inspiration through which that guidance continually flows to me. I am completely receptive to this guidance and live in a consciousness of joyful expectation of the good, acknowledging that the living spirit around, in, and through me is the only power there is operating in all I do, say, and think. So I consciously let this power direct me into constructive channels of self-expression. With each breath, I release all thoughts of fear from my mind. I lay down the burden of carrying the load of responsibility for life, for myself, for others. As I breathe, I lay all trouble aside, seeking to look through it, beyond it, above it, to detach from the reality of struggle to the realm of reality of oneness. I allow the divine wholeness to flow through me into ever-widening fields of activity. Every good I have ever experienced is now increased tenfold by means of this meditation. Every joy that I have ever experienced is now multiplied. And there is a new influx of inspiration into my thoughts, causing me to love more deeply, to share more widely, and to have an ongoing consciousness of loving kindness. I'm aware that my divine birthright is freedom, joy, and eternal goodness. The divine presence is right now interpreting itself to me, through me, as love. And it is showing up in my friendships, in my activities, in my business, in my study, in my play, in my world. And so it is. I invite you now to take a deep breath in and to sigh. It is time for our offering. So I invite the ushers to stand. And won't you please take your gift in your hand or hold your hand on your chest as a symbol of your heart connection to your gift and say after me, I bless this gift. I send it forth to heal and prosper. It does amazing work in the world. And so it is. Ushers, please receive the gift.